Hi, Ryan.
Hey, Rachel, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Doing pretty well. We're here, sitting in our recording booths. We're in separate rooms. Now we're in the same room, looking across at each other, longingly, lovingly, yum-yummingly. And we're here to talk about Star Trek Discovery. I'm Ryan, you're Rachel. People who are listening to this have probably listened to the previous episodes to understand the format. We're not going to explain it again.
What?
Okay, I'll explain it again. This is our rewatch of Star Trek Discovery, so spoilers and all of that great stuff. Where the Yum Yum podcast is our show Yum Yum Trek, because in an alternative universe that's an evil version of ours, Star Trek did not have the famous line, yum yum. But our universe, the good one where things are going great, the world isn't falling apart, there isn't fascism in the high up levels of the government, we got yum yum. And we just had to, you know, embrace the yum yum for our show. That is why we are called that. Rachel, you're looking very lovingly at me saying, yes, I agree.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely it.
Are you ready to hear what episode of Star Trek Discovery we are going to be discussing?
Well, I just watched it.
But are you ready to know which one it is?
I'm intrigued to see the way that IMDb describes it.
So this is season 1, episode 12. I forgot what number we were up to, so it's good we checked. Mm-hmm. The plot summary of this episode, called Vaulting Ambition, which is title dropped in the episode,
yeah,
is described as such. Burnham heads to the ISS Charon with a special gift for the Emperor. Gift is in, you know, little quotations. Mm. With the help of an unexpected source, Stamets gains clarity while trapped inside the mycelial network. Saru asks for Laurel's help. That is, those things happen.
Yeah, and they're kind of in order of importance.
No, you're right. You're right. They're in the exact order of importance. So let's do this. Let's kick it. Let's punch it. Let's go in. What did you think of this episode?
Like, it feels slightly above the rock bottom that was the last episode.
Yes. We could make a best of hits of every time I ask you, what do you think? And there's a delay and you going,
That is generally what I think of Discovery.
It's an Well, I'll tell you this.
Yeah, like, it's the kind... Generally, Star Trek Discovery makes me feel the way that you do when you start to... when you fart and you're like, that wasn't a shot, but if I fart again, it just might be.
Okay, what a nice thing to say. Remember, people listening, to give us 5 stars for our very even-handed approach to talking about this show, where we say, hey, it's like
hey,
a shot.
It can be a fart, or it can be a shot. Sometimes you
farts
just don't...
are good, but shots aren't good. That's where we're falling. This is... So with this episode, Vaulting Ambition, I didn't mind it.
No.
There's actually quite a lot in the actual episode that actually...
Things happen and they matter?
Well, things happen in a different way compared to last episode. Last episode, things happened and we didn't like that. But in this one, the things that happened more so that I found more attractive, more palatable, and this is still with the caveat of I still think the execution is a little lackluster, is this one is probably, out of all the episodes, the one that's most thematically rich and nuanced. All of the stories involved, all the key characters involved, have thematic through lines with the other stories and the other characters. We were talking early on that one of the issues we're having with episodes is what was the thematic coherence of the whole episode between all these different characters and stories, this episode actually manages to have that in a way that I would say is successful. The execution is a little lackluster in terms of dialogue and some scenes and this and that. I'm not saying that this is greatly executed, but I think that they actually have through lines with all the stories. And that is high praise when it comes to Star Trek Discovery. Not to say that there aren't episodes they don't have those, but more so than not, it is a lot of this storyline is just serving the point of we're setting something up, or this one's serving the point of we're paying something off, or this, and not so much focusing on themes.
You forgot a very important one.
Fights.
It looks cool.
Oh, it looks cool. Yeah. I dare to say that I enjoyed this episode, especially out of the Mirrorverse plot episodes thus far, which we talked about when we first watched it. We enjoyed the little Mirrorverse trip, but this time around, we haven't been enjoying it that much. I think this is out of the, three we're in so far, that I've enjoyed this one the most out of it. It felt like there were things that actually mattered. There felt like there were consequences. There felt like there were things, although this is the one with the least heavy narrative-driven plot. There was the other one where it was like last week, the rebels down there, we've got to go talk to them. That had a narrative-driven episode thing in there. And then the one before that was, what are we going to do? We have to go under, we have to learn their ways and ragtag and go undercover. This one is just kind of not so heavy on the plot in that way. Like, what's the plot to this episode? It is, she goes on the ship and tells her she's from another universe, and then, Lorca's from this universe. That's kind of really the big narrative force of the episode, but I didn't mind that.
No. I quite like that it does a good job at feeling like the episode before the finale.
Yeah, even though it isn't.
Yeah.
Before the finale of this chapter of the narrative of the Mirrorverse stuff.
I thought there was.
No, they've got two episodes after they come back from the Mirrorverse.
But isn't Remember? It a double-parter? So
no, I don't think so.
Okay, so I couldn't even give it credit for something that it actually is.
The only real double-parter is season 2's finale, where they have literally Such Sweet Sorrow Part 1, Part 2. I don't know if the ones in Season 1 are Part 1, Part 2. Maybe it's like the Vulcan Hello and the Battle of Binary Stars, where they are kind of a double-parter, but it's not said as such.
Your life will be long, Gabriel. And every single moment of it will be spent in our agonizers. A fair price to pay for your vaulting ambition.
I didn't hate anything in this episode. There were things that I didn't like, but there wasn't anything that made my blood boil or made me sigh. I didn't have a physical reaction in a negative fashion to what was on screen, and for the last few episodes, that's actually a big improvement.
Because
I've been a bit bummed that I've been feeling a bit down on the Mirrorverse stuff, because I like the idea. I like this storyline on paper, but the execution of it in the last few episodes haven't been really hitting. But this one, I think it just hit better for me. And I think the fact that, and it is a sad caveat of, because I didn't physically groan at any point in the episode means it was a good episode, is a bit of a sad state of affair, but it is an improvement. I didn't really go, ugh, what the fuck was... I didn't have a what the fuck was that moment in this episode.
No, I just had... I had a few moments where I was like, this is bad.
So, what did you get out of this episode?
Nothing, really. I don't know. I don't feel like I really got anything out of it.
Why is that? What about it?
It just happened.
But what about the content of the episode didn't hit across for you to the point in which you said there's stuff that happens in this episode, but what about it just makes you feel meh about the whole affair, that it really, you come across like, I got nothing out of it? Because if anything, that's kind of the most damning criticism of anything, is if you got literally apathy for what you've watched, then it's definitely failed.
Yeah. Apathy being the opposite of love.
Yeah.
In some people's opinions. I don't know. One thing is that it leaves you nothing to think about, and it has failed at establishing characters that I actually give a shit about. So I don't care. And the heartstrings that they do try and pull on, they either assume that you care more than I personally do.
Yes.
Or that they use flashbacks to make you feel things.
That is a criticism of this episode I have very strongly is I think that this episode, and I think with this show, we've talked about it before, but this episode prevalently would be improved 1,000% if they trusted in the audience's intelligence enough not to shove flashbacks right into your face so that when the characters are realizing something, you, the audience, are realizing it in the way that the show forces you to. Mm-hmm. They don't rely on your memory. They don't rely on your ability to think about what was happening while they were happening at the moment. They need to shove in, remember this, the sensitivity to the light. Remember that. Remember when he said fate in that one episode? We were praising those moments when they were happening on screen in previous episodes and when we were watching them because we were noting down these things because, look, maybe we're more keen-eyed viewers than the regular person, but the TV show itself should believe in the audience's intelligence enough to assume that they're watching the show, but this kind of is the lazy...
Just the fact that
the laziness of
the thing. Like, assume that your audience is actually watching is what you just said.
No, and that's what I'm saying. This is the critique of this use of flashbacks. It shows you that the creators of the show, and we've said this as the big criticism. Mm-hmm. I think the most obvious criticism we've said is they do not believe in the audience's intelligence. They do not have confidence that we will understand what's happening. So they need to shove it down your throat.
We won't understand and we won't remember.
So you need it fed to you.
But we care?
But the big thing is that
I don't understand how those things work together.
Well, they show you flashbacks of moments you should care about. That's how it works. No, that's how it works in the show. They think, yeah. Oh, we showed you flashbacks of Hugh and Paul, so that means you care. Mm. We showed you flashbacks of Vok and Laurel, so now you care. We showed you flashbacks of when Michael trusted Lorca, so now you care. Instead of letting us actually care.
That's very smart. You know, that kind of packing is very, very smart and plays very well. And we get it as an audience subliminally. And then when it's actually revealed, there's a lot of...
So what I mean by I get nothing is then I get... things happened and I noticed things and that is that. But I take nothing with me. Mm. So it's just like, yeah, things happened... I'm sure that I probably made this comparison, but it's just Cheetos. And it's just like, with the exception of this Cheeto packet has a lot of bad ones in it.
Mm-hmm. But what do you mean by Cheetos? It's like junk.
So it's full of air, flavorful, like it's designed to grab your attention, but has no value. And it leaves you hungry for something different. It only really satisfies
the basic instincts.
The basics, but in this comparison, it's just like the aesthetics of the show give me something to look at.
Right.
But there's no depth to the writing. I have no attachment. No shame on people who their favorite snack is Cheetos, by the way.
Like this show. See,
I will throw a little bit of shade on them because if you like this show and you cannot recognize that it has any faults,
well, yeah,
I think I have an issue with you.
If you think nothing has faults in general, and you like something, then you're a bit of like you got to really reflect on that because everything has a fault.
Yeah, if you can't accept criticism.
But then, of course, to counter that, Rachel, we see faults in this, but that isn't to say that we don't see what is appealing, what does work, what does attract people, what does... Because when we started this show from a negative headspace primarily of season two and Picard, and that left us in this space of how the fuck does anyone like this, or how does anyone enjoy this, and or how did I like this, or how did I enjoy this?
Who is this for?
And who is this for, we kept asking. But now we've come back, we're rewatching it, but also we're watching it in an analytical sense. Mm-hmm. We are diving deeper into it than a regular viewer would necessarily do. When we were watching it the first time, we're diving in deeper than that. And we are analytical people, so we watch things. We have hour-long discussion or two after, but now here we are, we're doing a podcast. We've got a reason to look into this episode. So
we're recording the weird conversations that
we
have as a result.
We are measuring on a curve that's different to everyone else.
Oh,
so
yeah.
When I say this episode was thematically rich, I'm talking about from the perspective of someone who is desperately combing through every detail and looking for any form of theme, structure, characterization, all that stuff. If I was just a regular viewer, would these thematic rich things that we are going to discuss, that I'm going to bring up, would they have been as prevalent and would they have been noticed by me as much as, say, the themes of another show that's currently on, like Better Call Saul, or even Game of Thrones back in the day, or old Star Trek? I don't think so. This requires you, at least for myself and for you, Rachel, us to look at it from a very critical eye to fully appreciate and or notice the nuances of the show. And maybe people who love the show, they can just pick it up and see it like that instantly. But for us, we have to look at it very hard to see these things.
Yeah, which is... In a way that it is really odd, because part of the... We have to look deeper to see anything good, but it slaps you in the face with everything as well.
Like we said, with the flashbacks and the big obvious lines of dialogue that are like, you get it? I want to talk about these themes or thematic through lines that witnessed
you,
in the episode.
You declared that this episode has a thematic through line.
Yeah.
What is the thing, like the idea that this episode's exploring, and what insight does this episode give specifically to that idea?
No, I'm just going to say the general statement. There must be a specific word or phrase that you literacy people can throw at me, but I don't know. But the thing
literate, come on.
Yes. But one of the things that... The thing I picked up strongly from each story, each main player, including Lorca, who is a little bit of a lesser player in this, but he is key.
Yes.
Is the... how the loss of someone or something can truly change a person. The desperation and loss of certain things. So, for instance, we have with both Lorca and Philippa, the evil Philippa, they both have this hole in their heart or in their soul for the Michael Burnham that they knew and lost. And both of these people have gone to certain measures within the episode and out of the episode to reconcile that, to cope with that. From our point of view, Lorca's gone to an antagonistic point of view where he's literally found another Michael and manipulated her and used her as a chess piece in his game. We've seen that in this episode. And then you see that with Saru's storyline with Laurel, where Laurel is compelled to help Ash Tyler / Vok because she's seeing this. She's losing the person, the individual she knew, because of something she did that was a drastic thing to hurt the humans. That kind of thing. And then with Paul, Paul's one is very obvious. His thing is him and Hugh, and we'll get into some of that in Hugh Dar, but I do want to discuss Paul's stuff, and including even Mirrorverse Paul on the superficial level of he has lost connection with his physical body, and he has gone to these desperate measures to try and get back to that by communicating with our Paul, by driving him crazy, by forcing him to kind of push himself to this dangerous level of getting trapped in the mycelial network so that he can escape. The through line that I've seen is that general idea is echoed in each one of them. Whether I find the Laurel one interesting or not, No. It is actually there, it is actually clear, and it is followed through on, Yep. As it is with the others. And I found that thematically rich out of all the episodes we've done. Because each component of this episode was feeding into the other, mirroring the other, or echoing the other. While in other ones that I've liked thematic stuff, it was just one part of an episode. Yeah. Like, oh, I like that stuff with Lorca and, you know, is he mentally unstable and all that. But that wasn't connected to really anything as strongly. This one, each one linked into the other thematically, and that's why I was okay with a lesser heavy narrative force in the episode. That stuff is what I saw.
I understood the themes to be slightly different than that, so it didn't land as well for me because of the way that I approached it. So I thought that the main theme or idea within this episode is really connections.
Yeah, yeah.
And the way that connections can be strength and weakness,
yeah,
at the same time is how I saw them. And I thought that they were trying somewhat to do a foil of, like, within the Federation universe, it really is that connections can become your strength, and it is your ability to rely on other people and to work as a community,
yeah,
that creates success, which is true in the Federation universe, and kind of the opposite is true in the Terran.
I agree, but also then you have the fact that Georgiou is willing to accept Michael at her word and at evidence and all this stuff. Yes, she's got to do it to get an engine part, but you know from her performance that she genuinely cares, while Lorca doesn't genuinely care about this Michael or anything. He is using her for his own perceptions of fate and destiny, which obviously plays into a lot of these other storylines too. Fate, destiny, there's the phrase one of the characters used of they use the phrase of, like, everything will be the way it was. There's that idea throughout the episode of, if I do this, everything will be the way it was or the way it should. And yeah, each story
Georgiou
is kind of proving
has a very similar line repeating that idea.
And each story is kind of compelled or confronted by that notion not being true. You can't force everything to be the way it was. You have to work with what you are given now. And I enjoyed. I was like, yes, this is what we need in a fucking episode. Some fucking depth and themes. Not Ash Tyler's a Klingon man and he goes growl and then it's like, you betrayed my love.
You said I was your tether. I need one too.
I thought that this episode tried. And more often than not, it actually succeeded. And that is wonderful.
It stuck the landing. Like, it followed through. Nothing in this episode really felt like it was on fast forward. It felt like all of these things are actually connected to the previous episodes.
Yeah.
In a way that matters, in a way that, yes, like, if you just watch this episode on its own, it wouldn't make sense.
No.
Like, you could piece things together because they throw shit at your face, but you would just be like, okay.
But that's not the design of the episode, though. This is like, hey, you're in it,
but
you're
it
in
it. But it feels like it matters that this is episode 12.
Yeah, I see. I don't have this issue like you do with this.
I do.
Because you've brought up constantly throughout the thing, oh, this feels like it's the second last episode of a season, or this feels... To me, it just feels like any episode thus far that has the dramatic sting at the end where it's like, da-da-da-da-da, Ash Tyler's a Klingon, da-da-da-da-da, Lorca's an evil mirror-verse thing. Like, okay, most of the episodes in the season has had the reveal of betrayal of, oh, Lorca isn't actually that nice. He has a Nazi laboratory on his ship. Da 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 da, and so forth. To me, it just feels like a regular pattern in that regard of the dramatic sting at the end.
Oh, yeah,
and I never feel the sting.
The sting is at the end of every episode, but I feel that more because of the way that, like, we come into the episode with the baggage and the understanding of the previous ones in a way that it like each of them have a connection. Like all yes. three main storylines actually matter and connect not just to the previous one, but also to the next one.
Yes.
And I don't feel like we've had that type of through line.
For an episode that did have a lot going, and look, I didn't care for the Tyler storyline aspect of it, but and we'll talk about that, but we've talked about before that they have a clearly great idea and they're spinning too many plates. There's too many things going on. This one had a lot of spinning of things, but it didn't feel like I was overwhelmed. It felt like each one mattered because of the through line of theme. The others didn't necessarily have that through line, and more so, they wasted great narrative ideas of like, ooh, that could have been an interesting episode about exploring a ship that is all like mutilated and the crew is dead, but instead they wanted to focus on these 15 things, or ooh, that could have been a great one about this. But this one, like all 14 million plots going on, all of them mattered, all of them felt relevant, and I wasn't lost. But Tyler's storyline, can we talk about it?
Yeah.
I think when we were talking about fast forwarding, his one was on slow because it should have been sorted in one scene, which was when Saru had that first conversation and she just basically said, no, this is the cost of war. And then what happens? We have another scene. It's the exact same scene, yeah. except for he shows her, no, this is the cost of war. And that changes her mind.
There's three.
No, I know there's three scenes, but
I got annoyed by that because it should have been just that last scene. It should be you are letting somebody that you care about tear themselves apart and then like teleporting him there, like, look at what you're doing to him and her being like, okay, it doesn't need to be across those three scenes, and it loses the weight that it could have had.
Yeah.
And it just feels like they split that up because they needed a B storyline in certain places throughout the whole episode.
One of the issues of that too is each of the scenes are the same scene except for the perspective, like the winner of the scene is flipped, so Laurel wins, then Saru wins, and so on. The mirroring, you could say, is a device that you can use in your show. One of the drawbacks, though, for this show is these scenes are, let's be generous and say 90 seconds long each. There are no 5-minute scenes in this show. They're always broken up. They're always spread across the episode. If you had a scene like this in, say, TNG, where you have at the beginning of the episode a character saying, please do this thing, I need your help with this thing. And then at the end, they have the exact same conversation and it's mirrored, but then the person who didn't want to help does help at the end. What you do have with that is, one, the scenes are long, or longer, they're more juicy. But the thing you have is, in between those scenes, whole things have happened in the episode to convince those characters that this is the path that needs to happen. But in this, we didn't really have that with Saru. We just had, like, he saw Ash thrashing around, which he already saw before. And then he just shows her footage of it, and that makes her change her mind. That's not compelling. He clawed his chest. It wasn't compelling. Then he just transports the Ash in there, and then she changes her mind. That isn't as narratively compelling for an episode. It just feels like this all could have been sorted in one whole scene in which he talked to her. But instead, we need to do the rule of threes. We need to spread it across the episode. We only have so much time. And with the way that this show is, scenes are short and fast, so you can't have a long scene of two characters talking.
We can't have a plot that only happens in one scene.
And no, you
come on.
And no, you really shouldn't. But since the way that this is structured for this presentation for Star Trek Discovery as a whole series, that is the way they're doing it is correct for the way that they have structured the pacing of their show. But it isn't as fulfilling to watch. While other storylines in this episode, I felt like they had time, they breathed a lot, they didn't feel like they were repetitions of scenes again and again. Like, Paul's stuff, although not the most interesting either, his things didn't feel like it was the same scene, but instead Hugh says the lines that Paul said in the previous scene, and that's like, ooh, like, not the exact same lines, but the notions of the lines. And and Laurel's whole thing too is, we've talked about this, but her plan is incomprehensibly stupid. And this show likes to beat you over the head, slow things down, flashback. But when it's stuff like, what the fuck is Ash Tyler? How did she create Ash Tyler? And what was the goal of creating Ash Tyler? It is sped through. The lines of dialogue are machine gun fired through. And we are just supposed to accept these crazy lines of dialogue and these weird sci-fi notions that go beyond science fiction, go beyond anything into magic. They go into magic because there's a line of dialogue, like, there's just so many crazy lines of dialogue where she says shit like, we grafted his psyche. How the fuck do you do that?
I have a nitpick with that dialogue.
We transferred his consciousness into this. What?
Yeah,
what? And then Star Trek Picard comes along and they're like, well, AIs don't have conscience. They don't have a conscience. And it's like, well, wait, if you in Star Trek Discovery can just beep boop a human and transfer their consciousness on a fucking floppy disk, then sure, AIs can have consciousness. You know what I'm saying? We grafted his psyche, Rachel. What does that mean? What does that mean? And we don't have time. We've got to keep going through this, because if the audience thinks about it too much, it doesn't make any sense.
The one you call Tyler was captured in battle at the Binary Stars. We harvested his DNA, reconstructed his consciousness, and rebuilt his memory. We modified Volk into a shell that appears human. We grafted his psyche into Tyler's, and in so doing, Volk has given his body and soul for our ideology.
She said something along the lines of, and this was confusing, we altered him to hide amongst your rank and take you down from the inside. He's a soldier. That's the cost of war. And all I thought was, he's a spy. That's what a spy does.
Yeah, it
he infiltrated them to garner their trust and information. That's a spy.
It's annoying on a lot of levels.
Lorca
does not make
Lorca is a soldier. He is infiltrating and pretending, but you know what he's doing? He has constantly throughout his entire storyline shown himself to be a soldier. Yeah. But they've just told us Ash Tyler's a soldier, and he says shit like, yes, sir, and whatever. But he hasn't demonstrated in the same way that Lorca has, that he's a soldier who's infiltrated the enemy. Mm. He has just shown us that he's a spy. Which, when you think of the two things, especially in a narrative, you've got a soldier character, you've got a spy character, very different.
What was with the gloves that she was using?
They were gloves that were shooting little lasers into his brain so she could re-alter his brain.
Yeah, and that's what she needed to do, but were they going through his scalp, or was it like,
I think they had
laser
his
acupuncture?
I think they had his head open, but his hair was still there.
Yeah, like, they did not do an effective job at conveying. It was just like she had mittens that looked more like the prop department modified a cat toy.
Well, I thought you were going to ask if that was a special piece of medical technology that she used in the first place, and if so, did she bring it aboard the ship then when she was a prisoner of war, or was that just something that the medbay had on them, experimental piece of technology that can graft your psyche? I'm never going to get over that. There was a goofy line about how someone's skin looked dewy in this episode, but that has nothing compared to, oh, we just grafted his psyche. What the fuck does that even mean?
We
grabbed a knife, we cut out his psyche, and we just grafted it. You know, we just grafted his psyche. Fuck off. We transferred his consciousness with a scalpel.
Okay. Ryan, I have another thing to bring up with that process.
Yeah.
Which was that the original Ash Tyler wouldn't have even been alive, and they declared that they managed to get an idea of his psyche from his DNA.
Well, they said they captured, he was captured at the Battle of the Binary Stars. She had prisoners when we saw her in Choose Your Pain, so I'm imagining he was captured by her family house.
She only talks about...
And they
About get from the DNA. But at that stage, if they were with Ash, that means that Ash would have been on the House of the Dead and they had
No.
They had to eat everybody.
No.
If
you're
he was
getting
on another ship, how did they get him?
From her family house that they retreated back to, because she's from the family house of deceivers and liars, and they retreated from there to surgically alter him. That's what happened at the end of the fourth episode, where it was like, what do we do now? We must go back. You must sacrifice everything. And they're going to go back. And that's why when she is in Choose Your Own Pain, she has her family houses. Like, she has a ship. She has all this stuff.
She's the captain.
She's got all that. That's the explanation that I'm going to go with. But there's stuff that they say, like, we captured him, and from his genome, we did this. And it's just jargon that they're going to throw at you because you know what sci-fi words are. Don't think about it. Shut your genome off. We got DNA. We grafted his psyche. I thought you were going to talk about the one that the big nitpick I thought that I'm perplexed by is, hey, we need you to perform invasive brain surgery on Ash Tyler. And I thought this too with the flashbacks. Please do it while he's awake and thrashing. Because it makes the scene dramatic. Yeah. We can't have the scene in which we operate on Worf's spine or do a heart surgery on Picard in which they're just, you know, unconscious or at least don't feel anything or thrashing around. We need this to be dramatic, Rachel, because this is an episode of House now where they're running and down the corridors and like, what are we going to do? That's all I have to say about Laurel's storyline is there's an interesting idea here, but they just want to rush through the details because they know the details don't make sense. We just got to rush through it.
Yeah, and they don't care enough to invest time to actually do anything properly.
And they think we care about Laurel and Vok's relationship.
Yeah,
because they want you to feel sorry for Laurel. They want you to feel sorry for her. They want you to feel empathy for her. I don't feel fucking anything for her other than contempt that she's wasting the time of the screen.
I don't think we can also, we can't discount as well the emotional connection that she feels she has with Tyler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's a giant part of it as well. And we want the audience to continue to sort of examine what we know about what Tyler has said about their previous relationship. We haven't really heard that side from Laurel. Mm-hmm. We're watching this unfold, but I think that there's something very specific about him as well that's important to her. Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about Paul's story in general. What do you think of it overall? And what do you think about evil Paul?
But like, okay. So what do I think? I think that it's not as deep as they are assuming that it is. They are taking it very seriously, and I like it that they do that, but also not, because with those scenes, it does feel slowed down and nice and peaceful in comparisons to the elevated approach that other subplots are getting in this episode.
I thought the Paul and Hugh discussions were nicely mirroring the Michael and Giorgio discussions. They were both level-headed. There was obviously intense emotion there, but they weren't like shouting. The music wasn't 100% swelling up. It wasn't feeling like I was being washed over with so much melodrama. Although, like you said, we don't care. Like, we don't buy it. Well, we aren't invested in that. the pacing of it and the execution of it was done seriously, and not seriously like, we're doing it seriously, like how last episode was with the point of melodrama. It did feel respectful. It did feel restrained, as does, and that was nice because that kind of mirrored what was happening with Giorgio and Michael. I felt like there was a somber, sad energy between those two things happening at the same time. Our investment wasn't there for the Paul one because of, you know, we have a whole segment and we'll talk about Hugh, but the energy, I thought it was pitch perfect. Lines, dialogue, yeah. Not so much, but and the intent, like the payoff from the intentions didn't work because, boy, do they think that toothbrushing scene was worth it, huh? They fucking think that toothbrush scene was like the scene of the show. They think that, ooh, the audiences, yeah. They love that toothbrushing scene. It was so emotionally impactful, that scene in which Hugh just said, you do this for glory. That scene, oh boy, we're going to keep using that scene as like the emotional linchpin of the season.
I genuinely am having trouble remembering that.
What, the toothbrush scene?
No,
You never forget the toothbrush scene. Rachel, it's more than a scene. It's more than a toothbrushing scene. It's a scene about intimacy, as the actor Wilson Cruz once said about the scene. It's a scene about intimacy. What did you think about Evil Paul? I like Evil Paul. I liked him in this. I kind of wish that the whole episode, that storyline was about him and Evil Paul together, bickering and Paul figuring out that Evil Paul has evil intentions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's awkward. I feel like that's a good way to describe
it. Well, what about it is awkward?
Oh, why have you always got to ask me to explain my thoughts? It's like, you think that that's the point of this?
Because this is a podcast. You need to clarify your points so they give us 5-star reviews. That's why we're in this. We're in this for the big money. We're in this for the Kurtzman money, by the way. I haven't told you this, but on Twitter, this is random. On Twitter, I randomly commented on someone's post about Star Trek Discovery, and I said some statement like, it needs more yum-yum because we're the yum-yum podcast. I thought that was very funny. And a random, like, anti-new Trek person, which, by the way, is very funny because we, I guess, may fall into that camp more so than positivity, but just commented, another bot or paid Kurtzman's shill. So, Rachel, I'm just sitting on that Kurtzman money, and I need you to tell me why it's awkward or Kurtzman's going to cancel those checks. We need that Kurtzman money. He didn't even write these episodes. He had nothing involved.
You didn't tell me about that money, so...
So it was awkward because...
Was that your nest egg to divorce me?
No. Now, why was it awkward, though? Seriously, I am thinking with him and Evil Paul, because I think it's only awkward by the fact that it feels like there should have been more of it.
Okay. One, I agree that there should have been more of it. But I say awkward because it felt like they were like, okay, we'll have one scene where it's actually the two of them, like we'll have one bit where they're actually together and we're having to do the double effect, and then
Paul runs away, that'll get
boring, so we're gonna have Paul run away to talk to Hugh,
who's not Hugh,
which Evil Stamets doesn't want him to do, and he's gonna bang on the bedroom door, thinking like, "We need to get out of here
because
you
it's not
need to save me."
Because it's not Hugh. We'll talk about that in Hugh. We'll debate about that. So you're saying it's awkward because you think for the technical purposes they were trying to cut around the doubling effect.
No, because they have no issues with doing that tech.
You sure?
Because
it looked fake in this episode, I'll tell you that.
It looked so bad.
I think what made it not work in an awkward sense is the line deliveries were delayed in weird ways. Like, you could notice there was a little bit of a...
The stitching...
The timing of it wasn't right.
We had to, like, rehearse the scene. I had to rehearse both sides of it. He had to kind of learn my rhythms.
Oh,
he
wow.
had my, I recorded it. He had my voice in his ear so he could do the rhythms, because I was, otherwise the timing would be totally off. And then he had to be in the same spot, so I was looking at the right place. I mean, it's really kind of a trippy thing.
That's heady.
But it took a long time, you know, to get it right, but it was also really exciting.
With the Pole stuff, yeah, more evil Stamets would have been good. I would have loved it if their interactions and them interacting made Pole figure out that this evil Pole is the reason for this sickness happening, and that evil Pole is, in fact, evil, but
yeah,
we have to get told that.
Yeah,
we have to get told it.
Nobody figures out anything. Everything just happens.
Well,
we need this piece of technology. Here, I made it.
Yeah, and that's all I have to say about the Pole stuff, really. We'll leave the Hugh portion of that for the Hugh Dar. The best part of this episode, though, is surprisingly Giorgio and Michael. And I say surprisingly because Giorgio is the evil Giorgio character is not for me once she comes back with the crew. But in the confines of this universe that she's from, I thoroughly enjoyed her. I found her the right level of campy. She never did it too over the top for me like she does with AI Sausage and Orange, really. This, it felt toned down, but also played up at the right moments. It felt like there was a steady hand on the lever of how much we crank it up and how much we pull it back. I bought her as this scary motherfucker, but also this vulnerable woman who's looking for a daughter figure. I bought it.
While also trying to maintain the demeanor that she needs to be a strong leader
filled
in her universe.
Fear and mistrust, because she doesn't trust Michael because she knows he's a fucking liar.
Yeah, but also it feels a bit odd as well, that scene, because of the way that we know that the Terrans work. It feels too intimate for her to say, yeah, I'm going to have her for dinner. And they're actually sitting down and eating. It just, I don't know, that didn't sit right with me.
Well, I think it sat right with me because I think for her, she needed the confirmation. Like, for her character. You're talking about the Terrans as a people, but I think we're giving enough of, she needs to know because she, this was the only person she's trusted in her entire life.
Yeah,
and then other than Gabriel Lorca,
she doesn't
Gabriel
get confirmation of anything. It's just like, okay.
She does. She knows she's lying.
We're done eating
Kelpians.
But she's not even really like, okay, you could never lie to me.
No, she could never tell when she was lying to her, but now she can see it.
Yeah.
And that's a part of, one, it's not the real Michael.
Yeah.
And two, she is lying to her. But that's the confirmation. Michael was too emotional, and she's been critiquing, she hasn't been cold enough. She hasn't been steel enough. There was a good back and forth, though, which is, you've become soft, and, well, you've become cruel. Mm-hmm. And that was a nice back and forth kind of dynamic there that I enjoyed. For me, I believed it. I believed that scene, although the sound effects were very odd. There was like knife coming out sound effects, yet it was on her flesh. It sounded like the wrong sound effect.
It
twice.
Didn't even sound like, yeah.
And I think it was the exact same one twice.
Yeah. It sounded like the noise that you get
when
you sharpen a knife.
Or when you're taking it out of its sheath.
Yeah.
When it of its holder, like it sounds
it's
like that,
like,
but not,
ooh,
not,
it's
not
sharp.
Not when it's pressed up against a woman's throat. It doesn't,
and
it didn't sound right.
Stationary as well.
Yeah, stationary. The second time she did move, so I understood why there was noise, but it still sounded like the wrong noise.
Why were you never satisfied?
I enjoyed this, and I'm really bummed that I'm gonna hate her character of Emperor Giorgio as time goes on, but in this episode she was glorious. Her outfit, the way she just killed motherfuckers and was just like, hey, you didn't see that, you get a promotion.
Oh, can I give it a little gold star for something too?
Mm-hmm.
In this episode they do set up that she has a title about Kronos, which comes into play in season two.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I'd forgotten
Or the
about.
End of season one, even.
Yeah.
I found her enjoyable. I thought the Michael stuff, the Lorca stuff even, the little we get of him, because you know something, Rachel, that I really liked that made the ending really great? At the beginning, they set up, he's been injected with this stuff so he can't feel pain. And we're thinking, he's going to, hurts less or can barely feel the pain. We're thinking, oh, he's wanting that because he is sick of feeling the pain. But what we learn is, at the end, he needs it because he knows he's going to get out of there by tricking a motherfucker. And I thought that, again, visual storytelling in a way, because there wasn't that line of dialogue to tell us that's what happened. He let it happen, and he let me, the audience, think about it in that light. It let me interpret that. Isn't that wonderful?
Michael is so great that she could just synthesize that. He just asked for it.
Well, she is a quantum mechanics, quantum physics expert and xenoanthropologist, so she can just whip up a paralytic easily.
Yeah, it's great.
I will say, we've made jokes about how the show constantly says stuff like, Michael, you're the best, and Michael, I love you, and the Michael I knew, I loved. This episode had that very much so, and I think we're going to disagree here. I think it earned it, this episode.
I agree.
Oh, good. It was one of those where I did roll my eyes because the show has leaned on this so heavily, but in this one, it deserved it. I felt like it earned it. I felt with the maturity of the performances and the obvious backstories that we get told and we don't get told with all the different iterations of Michael's and Georgiou's and Lorca's, it felt earned. It felt right. Mm-hmm. Even lines like, we're bound across, our bond is strong enough to cross the universe, universes or whatever. That line, cheesy, but I bought it. I completely bought their dynamic and everything with it. The thing that I don't like, though, Rachel, we already said it, the flashbacks. I really wish that the Lorca reveal was done in a more thrilling way, because I think the audience figuring out that he was the bad guy could have been done with him saying the sister's name, the guy torturing him, and he knew her name. That would have been a great little reveal of, oh, wait, how would he know her name? Mm-hmm. That would have been a great, like, and then he kills the guy and he does the thing. That would have been a great reveal. But I understand they want to have it be when we get revealed, they get revealed that they know. But they use the, we need flashbacks. And the thing that I've hated and I've always hated and season two completely abandons is, oh, the only biological difference we have is we're sensitive to light. A thing never used in any other Mirrorverse storyline. It's completely new and it really just, I don't know. I've always found that kind of hackneyed and lazy and a very obvious way to show that there's a difference here instead of what we've talked about, deducing, letting the characters figure it out. But that is a clue in itself, but it's such a big, obvious clue that they wave it in your face and show you all the times he's mentioned his fucked up eyes so that you, the audience, know. That's not a thing in our universe. It's a thing from their universe. But then Georgiou, her eyes are fine in the next season. And people go, oh, well, she got them surgically altered. Well, no, because Lorca specifically said that to alter his eyes, he would have to remove his own eyes. And as we know from this show and Next Gen, you cannot fix blindness. You can have an artificial thing, but you don't instantly get new eyes. It took Geordi several seasons to get his eyes fixed up, and he still alternates. So if you're going to say, oh, Georgiou in the next season, she just got new eyes. No, because even Discovery goes against that at points with cybernetic characters, as does TNG, and TNG is canon with Star Trek Picard, which is canon with this show. So, no. They just don't care. I think I hear, beep, 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 Hugh is here in the episode, and he's a ghost. Or is he? What do you think Hugh is in this episode? You look so annoyed, because I said earlier, it's not Hugh. And you gave me this look like, what?
It's a waste of a decent philosophical question. Because there's a long and continuing debate about whether after you have been transported, if you are you.
Oh, in Star Trek? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Or your new you. Yes. So, that's why bones don't lay transported.
Yeah. So it connects to that idea of me, of like what makes you you. Mm. Because Hugh isn't made up of the same atoms, but he had the same consciousness that he did before. He has all of the knowledge, including the moment of his death.
Well, so, okay. This is where it gets muddy, because I believe the exact same thing you do. But my problem is, I also believe, and the episode kind of corroborates this for the most part until the end, where it kind of cements what you're saying, which makes it annoying. I thought Hugh, the ghost Hugh, he's the mycelial network talking to Paul through the image of Hugh. And I thought that was the case, and they were doing it through Hugh, through Paul's memories, because Paul was there when all this stuff happened to Hugh. So Paul does know what Hugh is talking about in those moments, and Paul has thought these things about Hugh, and that is mentioned throughout the thing. But then at the end, it kind of says what you're saying, where it does feel like, well, this is Hugh's living essence has gone into the mycelial network. But then they also say throughout the thing, I am not Hugh. Hugh is gone. He's not here.
Like the physical body of Hugh, because we know that inside the network, only your consciousness can survive. So it is not the body of Hugh. It is Hugh's psyche. Maybe that's how they did it.
Here's the thing. That's not Hugh.
No.
Because Hugh, we will find out in season two, has been lost and is hidden in there and is destroying it from the inside because he's a foreign, like he's, you know, he's a virus. But this is the network talking to him, because as season two shows us, it grabs a person from your memories, from your brain, someone you connected with, and uses that image, that memory, that essence to talk to you. We've seen that. If that was actually Hugh, Hugh wouldn't be talking like in that prosperous, like, because the Hugh in this episode is serving one purpose only from a greater narrative perspective, not talking about relationship stuff, not talking about that. He is given this one thing. The network has been infected by a deathly sickness because of the evil one. Please do something. If that was the real Hugh, if that was the Hugh that we will see in season two that's stuck in there, it wouldn't have been that conversation in that way. It wouldn't have been the same.
Yeah, you're abusing the fact that I don't remember a lot of things about this show.
Nothing in here is ever truly gone. I believe in you, Paul.
I took it to be that that is Hugh's consciousness currently, and he is starting to be infected by the thing, because, like, we see his arm.
Yeah, that evil Paul had too.
And then what we see later is the further consequences of him still being stuck in the network and the network knowing how to deal with him and treating him like an infection.
I also think the infection, I don't necessarily think that it's from just this episode standpoint. Maybe the few future episodes will disprove this, but I don't think it's necessarily that the poles are stuck in there that's infecting it. I think that they've made a case that the evil pole has used the spore technology in a harmful way that has infected it. So I don't think it's the fact that Hugh's physical body is in there, or like, oh, his essence, or Paul's essence. I think a part of the sickness has started because they state that it's the evil Paul's fault because he has meddled with this technology and it has hurt us.
Yeah.
Whether that means he's meddled with it by putting himself in the network and that's infecting us wasn't fully demonstrated or explained in a way that made sense in this episode. Maybe in the next one.
I thought it was just that both of them have caused an imbalance within the network by doing different things. Because I don't think it would be unusual for somebody's kind of spirit to linger in the mycelial network.
No, I agree. But for me, I think Hugh was not Hugh fully. I think he was a representative of Hugh's essence, but he was a puppet or an image from the mycelial network to push Paul to do what it needs.
Yeah. See, I to happen took it...
because we know that happens in season two.
Yeah. I think on the first viewing and on this one, I looked at Hugh as not being properly Hugh, but kind of Hugh in the recycle bin. So it's just like, it's got the general vibe of the thing, but you can't really access anything. And then they click restore Hugh.
I don't know. We'll see when it comes to season two. But in season two, in my memory, it seems like Hugh was alive in there and he's like surviving in there, like eating stuff. And like, I don't know. It's very confusing. But other than that, there wasn't anything interesting or anything we really learned about Hugh other than, oh, he loves him. And that was about it. But the real juice thing, or the juicy meat to it is, is this actually Hugh? Is this a representation? What
I
is
thought
this?
You were going to say his line.
Which one? I love you, Paul.
No, this was always my favorite time with you.
Oh, but oh yeah.
Conveniently, the only time that we see them spend together
outside,
in a normal situation.
Yeah, outside of work environment. Yeah. We got the toothbrush scene called back to, and the show, I asked this in that episode, is the toothbrush scene enough to hang a whole character on for two whole seasons? And this episode says,
no,
this episode says, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I can't believe
that they think that. I can't believe.
No.
This is perfect. This was always my favorite time with you.
Did you know I loved you? I don't think I told you enough.
You showed me.
What do you give it? A yum or a yum yum? Yum being bad, yum yum being good.
Yum yum.
Yum yum.
You sure?
Yeah.
I'm surprised because you really said that you really kind of not only said but demonstrated in this discussion that you didn't get anything out of this episode.
Fun.
It was what?
It was fun.
It was fun and that's enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Obviously, I give it a yum yum too. I actually felt positive after watching this episode. I wish the writing could be a bit better, just in terms of dialogue. Just dialogue sometimes can be very pretentious. Are you ready
Episode 13 of season one. Let's go.
It is What's Past is Prologue. Lorca plans to move forward with a coup against the Emperor, propelling Burnham to make a quick decision to save not only herself, but the USS Discovery. Shush your face.
It's bad.
A pleasure, as usual, to be talking Star Trek Discovery with you, Rachel. Yum yum to you, a yum yum to this episode, and dare I say, a yum yum to the listening people still here.
I say yum yum to those checks, baby.
Oh, so you do get those Alex Kurtzman money.
Well, now I know about them.
Well, no, you got the Brian Fuller checks. I get the Alex Kurtzman checks.
No, that's not fair because Brian Fuller doesn't work on Discovery.
His name's all over it. You get those Brian Fuller checks. Your Hanagram checks.